priority and the feds won't step in. But there's a catch.
KCAR's Jake Woodburg is live down in the newsroom with the breaking details. Jake?
There, Greg and Mimi. This is a big decision that a lot of people have been waiting for. Finally, some clarity here. The Attorney General Eric Holder basically says he will leave Washington State and Colorado alone if the states enforce 8 key enforcement areas. Among those areas just released today, the AG says Washington State must make sure pot doesn't fall in the hands of minors. Revenue from sales of marijuana cannot be funneled to criminal groups. Marijuana purchased in Washington State and Colorado cannot cross state lines, and drug trafficking
is
still
illegal. It's a fucking joke.
Any of those areas are not strictly enforced. Holder says the Department of Justice will act aggressively, he says, to bring individual prosecutions based on federal law. Now, recreational marijuana was legalized, remember, by voters in November, and both Governor Inslee and State Attorney General Bob Ferguson have been trying to get the feds to clarify their position for months now, even traveling to D.C. to get it. A few minutes ago, the governor said he's very pleased now.
I think that what we've seen is a validation of a reason to believe that we are on the right track of being responsible. Being disciplined, real in figuring out a way to follow the voters' intent in this regard.
Now, there have been hints this could have been coming after President Obama said in December, remember, that the new laws were not a major concern for him. Now the State Department of Licensing is still working through details about how, when, and where licenses will be issued for businesses to start selling, growing, and processing recreational marijuana. At last check, they were aiming for December. We'll have a lot more on this at 5. Live in the newsroom, Jake Wittenberg, King 5 News.
Thank you, Jake.
We are so close to losing our democracy to the mercenary class, it's as if we're leaning way over the rim of the Grand Canyon, and all that's needed is a swift kick in the pants.
Look out below.
The predators in Washington are only this far from monopoly control of our government. They bought the political system, lock, stock, and pork barrel, making change from within impossible.
Fuck!
That's the real joke. Sometimes I long for the wit of a John Stewart or Stephen Colbert. They treat this town as burlesque, and with satire and parody, show it the disrespect it deserves.
It's a fucking joke,
the rascals got their just dessert. But the last laugh always seems to come from the old-faced names that populate this town. To them belong the spoils of a looted city. They get the tax breaks, the loopholes, the contracts, the payoffs. They fix the system so multimillionaire hedge fund managers and private equity tycoons pay less of a tax rate on their income than school teachers, police, and janitors. They give subsidies to rich corporate farms and cut food stamps for working people facing hunger. They remove oversight of the Wall Street casinos, bail out the bankers who torpedo the economy, fight the modest reforms of Dodd-Frank, prolong tax havens for multinationals, and stick it to consumers while rewarding corporations. We pay. We pay at the grocery store. We pay at the gas pump. We pay the taxes they write off. Our low-wage workers pay with sweat and deprivation because this town, aloof, self-obsessed, bought off, and doing very well, thank you, feels no pain. The journalists who could tell us these things rarely do, and some never.
This dude is the epitome of a disgrace.
Watch the evening news, any evening news, or the Sunday talk shows. Listen to the chit-chat of the early risers on morning TV, and ask yourself if you're learning anything about how this town actually works. William Grider, one of our craft's finest reporters, fierce and unbought despite a long life in Washington, once said that no one can hope to understand what is driving political behavior without asking the kind of gut-level questions politicians ask themselves in private. Who are the winners in this matter, and who are the losers? Who gets the money, and who has to pay? Who must be heard on this question, and who can be safely ignored? Perhaps they don't ask these questions because they fear banishment from the parties and perks from the access that passes as seduction in this town. Or perhaps they don't tell us these things because they fear that if the system were exposed for what it is, outraged citizens would descend on this town and tear it apart with their bare hands.
This is disgusting! It's disgraceful! It's embarrassing! And I'm ticked off!
Hello! Welcome to episode 102 of the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown. If you want to listen to any of the first 100 episodes, just go to DJMCloud.com/podcast. And for new episodes, we're posting those to PacificPelican.us/64. So speaking of those first 100 episodes, podcast number 88 is one where I discussed this fellow named Adam Kokesh, who is a podcaster, and he, let's just say he's a big fan of guns. So he wanted to organize a march on Washington, where everyone was carrying weapons, and they were going to mass on the Virginia side and cross the bridge. That was his plan. And I talked about that on that previous episode, but not long after that, I think he realized that not too many people were going to show up for something like that. So he did decide to do something a little different. He went himself, apparently, and is seen in a video loading a shotgun in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. So, due to the strict D.C. gun laws, he was aware that he was challenging the laws. And a few days later, he was picked up and arrested. And anyway, he's been in jail since. But this is a segment from a month ago or so where they talked to him.
He's going to run as an independent for the presidency, and his platform is going to be a simple one: abolish the federal government. Adam?
How are you doing, sir?
Since July 9th, 31-year-old Adam Kokesh has been incarcerated in a cell in the Fairfax County Jail, which measures 7 by 7.5 feet. On Independence Day, Kokesh had a colleague shoot a video of the pro-gun activist loading a shotgun on D.C.'s Freedom Plaza. U.S. Park Police used a flash grenade when their SWAT team later served a search warrant at Kokesh's home in Herndon. Kokesh was arrested when officers say they found hallucinogenic mushrooms at the house. In an exclusive jailhouse interview, Adam Kokesh denies any connection to the drug.
Hey!
If they found a stash of magic mushrooms in my house, they were not mine.
Any idea whose they were or why they were in your house?
I'm pretty confident that whether or not they found anything, the full paper bags that they brought into my house would ensure that they would have charges to bring against me.
We're super excited.
Are you implying that those drugs were planted? Yes.
Kokesh, who's been arrested several times by U.S. Park Police, says that agency has a vendetta against him. He believes the evidence in the drug case is weak. Federal officers have now filed a weapons charge against Kokesh for wielding the shotgun on the 4th of July.
Was it a real shotgun, and were there really shells going into it in the video you posted?
Yes.
You did know that that was illegal in D.C.
It's called civil disobedience.
Syria is arguably one of the biggest issues facing the world right now, with the possibility of military intervention from the United States of America. I have 10 main thoughts on this issue that I would like to explore with you right now. So to start things off, I'd like to talk about the evidence of Assad using chemical weapons. Are we convinced that concrete evidence exists? Because US Secretary of State John Kerry seems to think so. In his speeches and television interviews, he says, "We know
that the Syrian regime maintains custody of these chemical weapons.
We know know
that the Syrian regime has the capacity to do this with rockets.
It's certain
that the regime has been determined to clear the opposition from those very places where the attacks took place.
Firstly,
come on, don't bullshit me.
That chemical weapons have been used. And secondly, is there concrete evidence that the Assad regime have used them? If so, Vladimir Putin requested the other day that the US government presents this supposed evidence to the United Nations Security Council, which I personally believe is a good idea. If the evidence is so clear and compelling, then why don't the US government show it to the UN? Instead, we have witnessed an eagerness for military intervention ahead of the UN inspector's report, which I just find very concerning.
You know he armed Iraq. I wondered about that too, you know, during the Persian Gulf War, those intelligence reports would come out.
Iraq, incredible weapons. Incredible weapons.
How do you know that?
Well, we looked at the receipt.
Number two,
United
moral
States
authority.
Based on guns.
Barack Obama has made it clear that we cannot let atrocities occur in the world without holding the perpetrators accountable. Which makes sense. So if the US is going to respond to the use of chemical weapons in Syria, who is going to stand up to America's use of Agent Orange in Vietnam? Or the use of depleted uranium shells in the Second Iraq War, which has created radioactive dust which will last tens of thousands of years, and has caused a significant increase in birth defects and leukemia in the region? Who is going to stand up to Israel, who used artillery shells containing white phosphorus during the Gaza conflict? Is anyone calling for regime change there? Before making this video, someone informed me that white phosphorus and depleted uranium shells aren't technically chemical weapons.
I got a joint here, man. Especially
the insanity of this conversation we are having. Does the technicality of what type of weapons we use matter when it comes to mass murder? Tens of thousands of people have died so far in the Syrian conflict, but we're going to draw a red line on just the use of chemical weapons. Number three, the rebels. If the West goes to war against the Assad regime, we will be fighting on the side of Al-Qaeda. There have been many horrific videos coming out of Syria, but have you seen the one of Commander Abu Sakhar from the Syrian Revolution, who cut open
no.
the chest of an enemy he had just killed, picking out his heart and eating it on camera? Do we want to be fighting on their side? Do we want to be arming?
No.
This is not me taking sides with Assad, but merely pointing out the complexities of the Syrian civil war. The fact that we could be fighting alongside those that our governments have held as evil in the war against terror, I mean, would that make the US military an enemy of the state under its
yes.
own judgment? It's a very complicated situation. There is also the chance that rebels have been using chemical weapons in Syria, but Western governments have dismissed this, saying it's not possible.
Don't be ridiculous.
When the UN's Del Ponte had come forward and said that there was evidence to suggest that the rebels had used sarin. Or consider reports in the last few days, not in the mainstream media, that Syrians in Ghouta claim that Saudi-backed rebels were behind the chemical attack. Number four, strategy. Do you know what it is for military intervention? Do you know what the goals are? Or what the exit strategy is? Because I don't.
This is not your fucking property, go somewhere else!
Consider the conflict in Libya, where we saw rules laid down. But very quickly, the international community showed great concern because the lines were becoming blurry, allowing Western forces to go beyond what was previously understood as acceptable. And what about mission?
I sent you the dispatch name, man, I almost pulled my balls off, yeah?
Who is to say that is not going to happen again? Number five, intention. This point is pure speculation on my part, but I make no apologies, because when it comes to trying to suss out the intentions of the US government's eagerness to attack Syria, we can only speculate. We'll take the word for it. Personally, I believe America are using chemical weapons as a pretext for military intervention in Syria, which they have been planning for over a decade. This in turn will provide a backdoor for intervening with Syria's closest ally, Iran. Why do I think this? Well, I'd ask you to search on YouTube seven countries and hear what he has to say.
He said, I just got this down from upstairs in the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Number six, World War III. I personally don't believe that this will start a third world war. However, launching an attack on Syria could be the catalyst for a large-scale regional war in the Middle East.
Do you have an iPod?
Biggest superpowers will take sides, whether that is actually fighting, but more likely just arming those on the battlefield. Iran could activate Hezbollah and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which would pull Israel into the conflict, as well as many other countries. Number 7, legality. Regardless of your thoughts on the morality of military intervention, the US striking Syria would be considered an act of aggression under international law.
Yeah.
It will be illegal. It does make me wonder what the point of the United Nations is if America can just go about doing whatever it wants. Number 8, Israel. This one is a very quick point, more of a question. Israel the past few months has already been bombing Syria. Is that legal? Number 9, I get these things on camera. Alternative media. The internet has come a long way since 9/11, and the amount of alternative media available to the world has increased significantly. It has never been so easy to cross-examine news articles, to fact-check, and to identify when bias and propaganda exists. But the influence the state has is still very strong when it comes to convincing the public that something is in the national interest. Alternative media has been a window that allows us to see things that the mainstream media would not normally cover. Important information embedded within videos, memes, and news articles has never been so easy to share across the internet with friends, family, and strangers. And as a result, I believe we are so much more engaged with global issues today. If it wasn't for the rise in alternative media, I don't know what I'd be doing or thinking right now. Definitely not this, and I'd certainly be making much less informed decisions. It's not just about engaging people with new information, though, but empowering people out there to make it a better place. Number 10, do nothing. Something I have been incredibly saddened about during these discussions about Syria is that so many people who support military intervention, whether the government, people in the media, or just the public, have said that if you do not support military intervention, that you are effectively turning a blind eye and saying, do nothing. And this is simply not the case. Okay, take this for
example. Thank you very much.
The Washington Post has an article this morning about how Obama has turned his brain trust for selling his attack in Syria. Everything is politics to these people. And the Republicans are the villains.
Yes.
Don't care what the story, don't care what the event, don't care how serious or irrelevant, the Republicans are the villains, and that's how they sell it.
Stop whining.
And the Republicans have the slightest idea at the same time what really to do here. The Republicans / conservative right is just as confused about all this because they're scared to death to say or do anything critical of Obama. They're just paralyzed. And we all have a pretty good guess why that is, and it's race.
Wrong.
They're just paralyzed.
Bullshit.
Not only are they paralyzed from being critical, they think they've got to act like they agree and sign on.
You son of a bitch.
So whatever it is, amnesty, health care, there's no serious effort here to push back.
Here's my plan.
It's dog shit.
What happens sometimes, though, is that some people lie. And we don't run to the press and go, this guy's a son of a bitch liar.
Some greasy-looking stranger comes up to you on the street and offers you a swig from his thermos. No
away, right? But think about it. Oh,
shit!
What's all that?
This is the Pacific Pelican .us /64 podcast with me and with Jessica.
Hi, everybody.
Well, Jessica, this podcast that we're recording on September 4th, 2013, you know, like, has we've already, you know, had some clips about Syria and about, you know. I just played some of those clips.
The guy who took his shotgun into DC and
yeah
is now in jail because of that.
Right. I mean, I don't know. What do you think of that thing?
I think it sucks that he's in jail. But I think it's pretty crazy for him to take a shotgun into DC.
Yeah, the gun rights absolutists, you know, they want to challenge every, like, gun law and, you know, claim that they can just carry around a gun anywhere they want under the Second Amendment or whatever. And, you know, yeah, I guess I tend to be more in favor of some restrictions.
Yeah, I don't think jail is going to do much for him. I mean, I think if anything, it's going to make him want to have even more guns and yeah, you know, jail doesn't really work for anybody.
No, the system we have doesn't work. That's well established for sure. You know, I want to use this, clip,
because next up,
it's not, Apple, it's, Microsoft. Steve Ballmer is on his way out. What do you think of that?
Well, he's kind of a crazy, weird guy, and I think it's time for him to leave Microsoft. He's definitely been there way too long, and he is kind of a bad, you know, like, culture fit for the organization. So, I mean, not that I'm, like, totally pro-Microsoft, but I'm definitely not pro-Steve Ballmer.
If you were just looking at it from a detached perspective, you wouldn't recommend that they keep him on.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's been one of those things that people that are Microsoft fans have kind of been afraid to admit for a long time. Some of them, that this guy was a clown. You know, I mean, everybody is. Well, a lot of people have heard, you know, the clips of him acting like a goon. Like, maybe I should look a few of those up and just play them just to give people an idea.
Definitely play the developers one.
Oh, okay. I'll look up Steve Ballmer. It just, the first thing that comes up is going crazy. The second one is developers.
When I was working at GamePro Magazine, one of the editors showed me that, and I think probably for a good year or so, whenever we just kind of felt, you know, crazy, we're working with developers, we would do the developers. I mean, he just really gets into it, and he's sweating on stage, and just sort of a crazy thing. I haven't seen the Steve Ballmer goes crazy. I don't know if that's
I think that's just a description of several of the different, like, sales presentations and stuff that he's done. Here we go, this is the Developers Club. It's loading. I don't know.
Everybody's watching YouTube. It right now.
YouTube is trying. Yeah, well, I mean, this Chrome Canary, I'll tell you, this, it's not very good. It's not very stable. Because I use the Canary channel, which is like a beta type of version of Chrome. And it, I don't know, you know, there's been some issues with it, like, lately. It used to be really stable, and now, I mean, you feel like, oh, now I'm paying the price for actually using the
beta. Developers!
Oh, shit!
Yes!
Shut up!
And people in the audience are just clapping along because they just have no idea what else to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people, there's a certain group of people maybe that work with Microsoft software and stuff, and they believe in it. And you know what happens though when you talk about Microsoft, they have problems in their core business, Windows, and Office too. I mean, you know, they tried to use Office to promote their platform. And for a long time, Windows had a massive market share in operating systems, right? But because of tablets and smartphones and the fact that their Windows 8 offering in those areas is lame and unpopular, they've lost a huge market share, in effect, right? And there's no good answer to this problem in their business. And it's corrosive of their, you know, their future profits. And, you know, they're in a... Right? I mean, what do you think?
About it being corrosive to their future profits?
Yeah, or just... what do you think about their future financial picture?
I think the biggest thing that I think is really interesting that I've heard on, you know, some of the podcasts is this idea of splitting up the company.
Yeah, that has been mentioned.
Business units, you know? So having, like, games and phone and tablet as one... Having, you know, the enterprise systems as another. And then I guess, you know, leaving Windows to its own self. But I think one of the critiques was, you know, well, they share so much stuff. And, yeah, they could license it back and forth. But I think, you know, if they did it just sort of consumer-facing, but were really still one company... but they started to brand themselves a little bit differently, they might get an edge and they might be able to break away from, you know, they're probably still called like Microsoft Game or something because they're stupid and they can't ever get away from their big, huge name because they think it's important. But
they have to jam the word Windows and everything.
Yeah. But I mean, it might be an interesting way. I don't know how they operate together now. I get the feeling that they probably even kind of act like separate companies because there isn't a lot of, synchronicity between them, and you know, why not just make it more official?
Yeah, I guess they have had a reorganization recently, and they have I've heard criticism of something that people are calling stack ranking, that the management was based on like ranking everyone in every group, so there was like this terrible inter-office competition and not good teamwork and not proper focus. And then, like you said, there's inter-division rivalries. And what that's come down to is Windows and Office basically making everything go through them. So anything that, you know, wants to be a major product has to have their branding and that type of thing. And now, like, it used to be that, like, Microsoft Windows was so widely popular as people's everyday operating system that Microsoft Office could be compelling. But now, with Google Docs... and with all the other competing Office suites, and there's LibreOffice, there's so much competition. And for a lot of people, they don't have a Windows device, so it's not easy to run Office. So Office, you know, it's one of those things that they used to reinforce each other, and now that neither of them is on, I don't think, you know, Windows is on half of people's everyday computing devices, you know, in a broad sense, because a lot of people basically use their smartphone. They might have a really outdated computer now, right? But they basically use their smartphone for most computing tasks.
I think a lot of people use it at work, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'd be people that's what you were saying, enterprise, right? Well, that's the thing, is that maybe you would just keep Windows in that enterprise division, even if you were breaking it up, because it really is, still... very prevalent there at companies. Maybe smaller companies are starting to cut out a lot of Microsoft stuff, especially heavier stuff like Exchange, maybe even Office. But then even eventually Windows, if they want to become... It's easier to become a Mac shop now. It's easier to move over to desktop Linux, Ubuntu, you know, other stuff. So, you know, I mean, in every direction there's intense competition. And there's hungry competitors. And they haven't always been able to beat Microsoft, but they're all, you know, still trying. And there's a, you know, there's another development. They basically bought Nokia's handset division. They bought out Nokia, but Nokia actually makes a lot of big telco equipment that they sell to companies. That division is, you know, still going to be whatever in Finland, but Microsoft is buying out, apparently, like, this includes like some 20,000 plus employees maybe, but it's they bought out Nokia's handset division.
The thing with Microsoft is I remember, you know, when I worked at GamePro and the Xbox was coming out, they had this whole strategy that they were going to make it the home, you know, center, and I don't know that they've really done that, you know, like I don't feel like it's really advanced to that state, and so I don't know what's happening internally that, you know, they can paint this picture and buy these companies and think they're going to do something with them, and then what happens, you know, and then does it go back to the question of leadership that they don't have somebody to truly really lead them into buying this company and really turning it into something? Like, what are they going to do with Nokia?
Well, this is what happened just, you know, in the last few years. It's been a mess. It's like what happened was Nokia got a new CEO. He was a Canadian former Microsoft executive, Stephen Elop. He switched the company off of Nokia's Symbian platform and decided not to go with something like Android and decided instead to partner with Microsoft for Windows Phone 7, which wasn't very popular.
That was their big announcement, right?
Yes, and then then they tried a Windows Phone 8 also, and they tried putting a really high megapixel camera sensor in the phone, and they tried, you know, making them like different colors, right? And it didn't catch on en masse. It was there are, you know, a number of users of Windows Phone. I'm not sure if it might be competitive with BlackBerry, you know, in the single digits, but you know, Android and then iOS are the big platforms now for sure. And it's hard to see Microsoft becoming like a significant player in mobile. You know, there are, and I think there's a lot of people, like, you know, I've talked about this before. I kind of laugh when a lot of people will say that they like the Windows Phone in the tech media, but very few of them use that every day. It's one of those things that, like, you wonder, you know, how Microsoft really, like, They always kind of scared people with their advertising money, right? Like at places like CNET, there was like very little editorial integrity over Microsoft issues at CNET for years because they just advertised there so much.
Oh, for sure.
And I think there's a set of different things. Like think about the Gates Foundation. Think about like all these different ways that Microsoft has propagandized like people. It's kind of falling apart all at the same time. Like, you know what I mean? Like the Ballmer firing opened the floodgates, I think, in the mainstream media to some extent about talking about what a clown this guy was. And that hadn't really... Do you know what I'm saying? There's just been a lot of denial because he was still, you know, in place. And there's just a lot of fear out there, I guess.
Oh, yeah. He was there for a long time.
Yeah, and Bill Gates really... You gotta like, point the finger at Bill Gates in a lot of ways because Steve Ballmer was really just doing what Bill Gates wanted, and he was certainly doing it with his backing. You know, Bill Gates always backed up Steve Ballmer, and the reason that Ballmer is being forced out is probably because Bill Gates stopped backing him 100%. You know, and there's probably enough doubt on the part of a lot of other people, but if Gates wouldn't back him 100%, that probably took, you know, made the difference, you know. Yeah, I mean, let's see, we'll get another clip. Sorry?
Oh, go ahead.
No, what's up?
I was gonna say, who do you think is gonna replace him?
Oh, you know, it's one of those companies that's never had an outside CEO. So, I don't know. It's hard to speculate. They like to promote from within. On some level, they probably know that's not a good idea. You know what I mean? Like, but don't you think, like, they're not the kind of place, like, a lot of people work there for a little while and leave. It's a very strange place. I don't know, you know, I don't know who is going to want to take the reins there. Because I'm not sure that they're going to be able to convince a top-tier candidate that this thing isn't going to just be a nice, you know, fast ride downhill.
Yeah.
Here, like, now, they were interviewing about the iPhone.
Ask you about the iPhone and the Zoom, if I may.
Back in 2007.
He's getting some traction, and Steve Jobs goes to Macworld, and he pulls out this iPhone. What was your first reaction when you saw that?
$500, fully subsidized with a plan? I said, that is the most expensive phone in the world, and it doesn't appeal to business customers because it doesn't have a keyboard, which makes it not a very good email machine. Now, it may sell very well or not. We have our strategy. We've got great Windows Mobile devices in the market today.
Dell, I can report to you that Apple is ready to.
Now for $99. It's a very capable machine. It'll do music. It'll do internet. It'll do email. It'll do instant messaging. So I kind of look at that and I say, well, I like our strategy. I like it a lot.
How do you compete with that, though? He sucked out a lot of the spotlight in the last few weeks because of what happened at Macworld, not only with the
iPod, I'd love to show it to you,
but with
so let's go ahead and roll
new iPod. How do you compete with that, with the Zoom?
Right now, well, let's take phones first. Okay. Right now, we're selling millions and millions and millions of phones a year. Apple is selling zero phones a year.
Trust
Six me, months, they'll have the most expensive phone by far ever in the marketplace. And
it's pretty awesome when it works.
What's the expression? Let's see how the competition goes. In the case of music and entertainment players, Apple absolutely has a preeminent position. We said we want to be in this market. There's a lot of reasons why we're doing. We think we've got some unique innovations, particularly what we're doing with community, with wireless networking. And we came into the market, a market which they are very strong. And we took, I think most estimates would say we took about 20-25% of the high end of the market.
All right, so I mean, seriously, he's 20-25% of the high end of the market. You know, he thinks that, like, let's see, mobile phone market share. Apple's share is 43% according to some, you know, survey from that they're writing up in VentureBeat.com. And then Android is up there. 52% of customers bought an Android. And then it went down to 46%. So they're close. 44% Apple, 46% Android. How much space is even left? They're just going on, you know, they're not really given much data. It's because it's talking about, you know, seeing things happening, you know, at some point, and people are buying them in Italy, where it's 13% of new phone sales in Italy. So it's nothing, you know. It's like, I mean, 13% in Italy, you know, like a country of 60 million people, you know. I don't know. They're trying to find something to say about it, right? Like, it's not popular, and it's kind of lame. Like, you know, it has the restrictions of iOS, but, like, you know, the it's not as cool as Android. It's not actually as open, but it's not as cool as iOS because it's not nearly as polished. It's not nearly, you know, it's just like, and iOS has a new version, iOS 7 coming out, you know, like, I just don't, you know. So what do you do when you take it over? Like you say, you divide it into different parts, but what parts are any good?
Not a lot.
Yeah, people, your first day, You're just like...
Your first day at Microsoft, you're probably calling the IT department.
Anything else going on?
Well, we just got back from a Western New York trip.
Niagara Falls, New York.
Yep. Syracuse, New York. And?
Ithaca.
Yeah. Very pretty countryside and cool towns and a lot of fun.
We went to the New York State Fair in Syracuse. We saw the Buttermilk Falls in Ithaca, and we saw the Niagara Falls, including taking the Maid of the Mist boat.
Which is really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
we walked around the state park overlooking it, although the actual most overlooking part they're like refurbishing. And then we went to the whirlpool too, and they said because the water flow has been restricted, it doesn't whirl like it used to. But you know what I mean? It was still whirling around, kind of slowly.
Did you ever confirm if that was where they did film Superman?
No, I have to confirm that, but I'm not sure if they may have had the flow on and had a raging whirlpool for that scene. I'm not sure, or maybe they did it in a spot that overlooked the falls.
Of course they turned it on for Hollywood.
Yeah, and maybe it's special effects and it wasn't based on the actual real backgrounds too. I don't know. Yeah.
It was really neat. And then we went to the Hard Rock Cafe for a beer, and this waitress was telling us all these morbid stories about people going over the falls. And we watched some crazy YouTube videos of people going over in homemade barrels and, you know... Some people made it and some people didn't. And then some people went over in like jet skis and kayaks and they certainly didn't make it. So it was kind of fun to hear the lore and story about all the crazy people going over the falls.
Yeah, what did you think of the New York State Fair?
I liked it. It was big, very, very big. And lots of cool exhibits. And lots of them. I mean, I was looking at the photos on Instagram, and there's so many things, you know, that we just didn't get to see, but we saw so many other cool things. But there was, like, birds and goats and lots of pigs, which are really cute. We saw the cow parade.
Yeah, we were in, like, the cattle pavilion, we were, like, we went around. There were a lot of, like, random exhibits from, like, New York companies, and then there was, like, the fairgrounds kind of area with the rides, and I got cotton candy at a booth, and then we were in the maple section at some point, and you found maple cotton candy. So
not only
do we have the conventional blue, pink, yellow bag of cotton candy, but then also they had the maple flavored stuff at the maple corner of a really big kind of tent building.
Yeah, I mean, we were walking out and she just handed me a big chunk of it and I was like, oh, this is really good.
The samples, yeah. Yeah, and I've had some, it is good, yeah.
And it was a neat place. And
then Ithaca, you liked Ithaca, right?
I did. I thought it was a cool town. I liked the Cornell University campus up on the hill and Ithaca College.
Yeah,
too.
It's a beautiful area. It really is.
And it's small and quaint, but it's got a good vibe to it, you know?
Right.
And if you're going to school there, you'd feel like there was, you know, a lot of cool things to do. Where Syracuse was nice, but I didn't get the same kind of, like, cool vibe that I got in Ithaca.
Yeah. I thought Ithaca was a little more kind of, scenic and a little more laid back. Yeah, I'd say so. And they're both on lakes, but Syracuse has like a bigger kind of lake that the main town is below, but then the state fair is west of, right? Like fairgrounds. And then Ithaca has that one of those long finger lakes, but but what actually goes through it is like a river from that, right?
Yeah, and we did. We saw some of the Finger Lakes as well as we were driving around that part of the country. So it was a nice way to celebrate Labor Day weekend.
Cool. Yeah, we on the way up, we were kind of on the Ontario coastline right there, and then went through the Finger Lakes on the way back. It is, and yes, we saw a good bit of Western New York for sure.
And I guess while we were away, you know, the government was trying to figure out what to do with Syria.
Yeah, Syria has, at the very least, the march to war has slowed down, and there are a lot of questions.
England, are you with me?
Yeah, I mean, you got to give it to Britain. They voted down David Cameron's desire to get. You know, it's kind of symbolic, but it was important to have some people consider the country's closest ally right alongside. And when that didn't happen, you know, I mean, it's strange that Obama keeps it. I know Obama seems to want a war, and that's really not good. But it's just strange how he keeps handing it off to for approval somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, he didn't get it from Britain, so now he's like kind of asking for approval from Congress, but saying he's gonna do it anyway or something. You know what I mean? It's always, instead of like just making presidents declare war, like is required in the Constitution, and making it only a response to aggression, like is required under the UN Charter,
mm-hmm.
then we shouldn't have war, right? Can't we just meet those two conditions? The Congress declares war, and the reason is for self-defense under the UN Charter, not aggression on another state, right? What gives us the right to invade Syria? What makes America or Britain or France or anybody else able to decide what should go on in Syria?
Nothing, but then on the flip side, you know, is there a body that can help them if they really are getting, you know, chemical weapons being used on them? I mean, who do they go to? I mean, I'm not saying that it should be America, but there's so many corrupt governments out there.
Yeah, but I think America's government is maybe one of the most corrupt in the
for
world.
For sure.
And so there's no business. These countries have to reform themselves.
Who do we go to?
No, that's the problem. We don't. It wouldn't help us in the long run. Do we want another country to come in and fix the problems in this country? Even though this country, like Bill Moyers was clipped earlier saying, and you know, like about how we're really on the edge of not being a democracy anymore. And yet, is it really up to another country to come in here and fix it, even if some other country were powerful enough to conquer America, you know, which is impossible now militarily, you know, America has to work it out ourselves. And the same problems with Syria, it's like Texas has a ridiculous death row that seems like an assembly line, and yet, you know, Mexico, in fact, Mexicans have been, you know, Mexican nationals have been killed in it, right? And yet Mexico, I mean, is the solution for them to try to invade Texas? You know what I mean? They have some military.
Yes.
They could try. Well,
you can have Texas, Mexico.
No. Don't make it about domestic politics and what we need to do about their secession desire, right? Just leave them out there for Mexico to take, you know? Like, no. I know what you mean. But no, seriously, though, right? It's like there's a lot of injustice being committed. And like, should Cuba invade Florida because Florida has capital punishment, quote unquote, you know, state sponsored murder, and well,
and
maybe
shoot
Cuba.
Shoot you because I got scared last.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
So
that's,
long, Florida.
That's
take
exactly.
Take it back, Mexico.
Well, no, I think that was
See?
Spain. I think Spain had Florida.
Well, they can have it, Florida too, because Spain's like, they're too far away.
They wanted Florida, but, you know, we managed to get it from them.
Let's give it to Mexico as a gift.
Do you have an iPod?
I do.
Well, I guess we're going to, we'll have to see. Just like what we're ready for, bed.
Well, I can report to you that Apple's ready to.
So good night, everybody.
Good night.
And thanks for listening. This is the PacificPelican.us/64 podcast.
Number 102.
Thank you.